My children are tornadoes. So even if they have quiet time, it is just loud. It's almost my oldest son is so extroverted. He just you hear him before you see him. But I will say that now that they're older and they're much more independent, I feel like you mastered this so much better than I did early on. But I finally feel like I can say to all of them, mom just wants an hour. End of the day, I'm like, let mom go in, maybe watch a show, chill out for a second, have a snack, and then we'll read together.
Hi, I'm Sarah Kuhn. Welcome to the Juno Women Podcast, where I sit down for candid conversations with women who are experts in their field and share their specific knowledge so that we can become better equipped to handle all things motherhood. Juno Women is an extension of Juna, a fitness and nutrition app created to help guide you through your trying to conceive, pregnancy, and motherhood journey. Everything we do at Juna is designed to empower and support you through one of the most incredible and challenging times of your life. Today, I'm talking to Sarah Dorsett, CEO of the sleep company Nanith. Sarah has worked in e-commerce for 2 decades, scaling retail businesses and building brands including Coty, Bed Bath & Beyond, and Bloomingdale's. Sarah and I are both moms to 3 kids and have our share of experiences, both good and bad, with sleep. In this episode, we talk about fostering good sleep habits early that take your kids through their childhood. We also talk about how tracking our own sleep helped us make more deliberate choices so that we could make better decisions about our health. And we touch on how technology has helped parents and their children get better and more effective sleep. This episode was a fun one to record, so I hope you enjoy.
Sarah, thank you so much for joining me. I'm excited to have you on the podcast today.
It's my pleasure. It's nice to be here.
Yeah, well, why not? It's very easy with us both being Sarah, so. Why don't you start by giving us a quick intro, who you are, a little bit about you and your family, and tell us like how you came to be the founder of Nanit.
Well, I'll start with the ending because I'm not actually the founder.
Okay.
I'm generally credited as being the business founder of the company. So definitely I was brought in once the product was really developed and was ready for market, but needed to have a little boost in terms of how we went to the market. So I have been I'm credited with building the commercial side of the business itself. But the founders of Nanit were parents. So just to go back to the beginning of your question, I'm Sarah Dorsett. I'm currently the CEO of Nanit. I've been with the company for about 4 years now. We've been in market almost for about 4 years. I love the business, and I joined because I'm a mom of 3 living in New Jersey, but I think our business is in New York, and have struggled with all of the things that I see our parents struggle with all the time. And it's pretty great to be committed daily to a brand that's just constantly trying to give parents what they want, which is simply a happy, healthy family with lots of great sleep.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I think it's funny as any of my friends become first-time moms, as I reflect back on my own first-time motherhood experience, and obviously second and third time too, so much depends on your kid's sleep, and so much of your feeling like you're doing a good job depends on whether your kid is sleeping and if you're sleeping, and so it's just such an integral part of that motherhood experience.
Absolutely. I think whenever I talk about the brand, I always say it has so many benefits. It's unlike any other product that you'll buy for your family, especially in those early days when you first bring that new baby home. But we start with sleep, and we focus so much on improving sleep and the sleep experience and understanding the impact of sleep because, like you said, everybody's a zombie if you're not sleeping. And so it doesn't matter how many other great things we add to the brand or the product or encourage you to do. If you're exhausted, none of it feels good. And we try to get you through sleep first.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, for people listening, today's podcast is going to be a little bit different because Sarah and I are going to talk about our experience with our kids' sleep and then also our own sleep and how all of that stuff has been impacted. So hopefully you will enjoy this format. But let's start with, I want to hear from you as a mom of 3 kids. How did you think about sleep and encourage sleep in the early months of your kids?
Oh my gosh. So I have 3. So my first child, I was, for lack of a better term, religious about it. So I read various books and I tried different things, and we felt pretty good about 3 or 4 months in. We had a pretty good sleeper, which was really nice. And he remained that way, which was the second one came along about 18 months later. And basically anything we'd ever learned went completely out the window. My second one had more, he had a few kind of health issues early on, was maybe a little more sensitive. And so we were, I think, a little more anxious as parents. And we didn't focus so much on his sleep schedule as we did, is he okay? We hated to have him out of our sight. So that poor child slept in our bedroom in a pack and play for a very long time. I'm embarrassed about it. People can see why I chose Nanit, because I didn't want anybody to ever go through the terrible choices that I made. But anyway, when we finally got him sleeping in his crib and relaxed, I think one thing that was really healthy for us, so my daughter came 3 years later, was we always put the kids to bed at the same time, and we always had a routine. My husband particularly just loved reading to them. They just had so much fun. He was such a good storyteller, and they loved looking at pictures, and they had these special like ways that they read different books, but they did it together. So they always went to bed at the same time. They had their same routine. And still today, they have a very sort of specific routine. They both go to bed at the same time. Frankly, all three of my kids do. There's no flexibility. One kid does not get to go to bed before another kid, which actually benefits my 5-year-old, because she gets to go to bed later than right. Boys ever were allowed to, because they're a little bit older. But she doesn't suffer for it. And she tends to, what's really nice about my 5-year-old is, we could not sleep train her at all. We tried, but we couldn't. And she eventually ended up, at this point, she tells us when she's tired and she puts herself to bed, which is not what my boys do at all. So I think,
by the way, that's consistent with my girl.
What'd you think?
That's consistent with my girl. She's like, I'm tired, I'm going to bed. And my boys would never do that.
Never. Yeah, never. So it's really interesting how the birth order and the gender and all that stuff played out. But very unique experiences, I would say, with sleep overall. And I feel like I never got any sleep for a very long time.
Yeah. When for me, I was the same way with my first kid. I was super rigid and not so much with the schedule, but very much with my first kid, I just always felt like I had an overtired kid and I just didn't know about wake windows. And so with my second kid, I was like diligent about wake windows, but was still very much suggest people look at your kid, not at what a book or a course is telling you. And I think that was one of the biggest pieces of learning curve, or like for me was like, oh, I shouldn't just follow something because someone's told me to do that. I also have to read the cues of my kid. And with my daughter, like she had a much shorter wake window than either of my boys ever had. And so I was like so good at it. And both had I followed what a book had said or what if someone on Instagram told me, like we would have been missing her wake windows. And then the other thing that I like must say is it's shocking how much things change and how fast they change. And I think that with each kid, that was always surprising to me. It's because I'm like, oh, like finally this is working. And so I'm just going to keep doing exactly this. And then 2 weeks later, my child changed. And so learning to give myself a little grace, I'm like, yeah, this might have worked yesterday, but it doesn't work today.
I completely agree with you on that one. It's interesting because I talk about Manit all the time and sort of the benefits of being able to understand through the data that you're getting how your individual child is responding. But because we're working on this stuff all the time, it's so true what you said, that usually during the day, kids aren't really, they're developing, but they're so overstimulated. We know that they're like sponges. They're absorbing everything all at one time. And you're engaging with them. Life is so overwhelming when you're growing, but you're also trying to get used to the world. It's really at night when they're developing, and all of those changes can completely impact how they sleep. And it can be day to day sometimes. And I love to talk to parents about that. Watch that data, because as you see shifts, you might start to see patterns. Like when they start teething, you might always see the same sleep regression, or they might wake up just a few more times every time they're feeling a little icky or starting to come down with something. And as I've started, and even believe it or not, right before they walk or crawl or have any major developmental milestone or movement milestone, they also start to wake up more in many cases, and they start to move around a lot in their sleep.
Yeah.
And you can see that in their data. And I had a mom call me the other day. She was an investor, actually. I had pitched to her, and she was about to have twins. So I sent her a couple of cameras, and she said, "I remember you taught me." She's like, "I predicted when my baby was going to walk." Because I could see the data. I could see he was a little more restless at night. He was waking up a lot more than usual. And I told my husband, "I think he's going to walk." My husband said, "You're crazy. I don't know what you're talking about." A couple days later, he was walking.
Oh my God.
And it's just so interesting how much you can learn if you just watch those patterns. And it's pretty simple with Nana. It's fascinating. I just absolutely love it.
We're going to take a quick break so I can tell you about the Juna app, the app that makes this podcast possible. Juna is the premier app for every stage of motherhood, with a 12-week trying-to-conceive plan and workouts, key nutrition information for every week of pregnancy and postpartum, plus 6 full video courses on birth prep, breastfeeding, newborn care, infant sleep, sleep from 4 to 12 months, and starting solids. The app is designed to be your number one companion from trying to conceive through your baby's first year of life. It also includes daily diaphragmatic breathing exercises, pelvic floor prep, daily tips, and notes from me that are relevant to the exact things you are experiencing. These are so helpful for easing any fears and preventing the dreaded gestational Google mania, that sickness where you can't stop Googling every little thing that happens during pregnancy. Juna is available for both iOS and Android. Just search Juna in the App Store or go to juna.co. Again, that's juna.co. The app is completely free to try for 7 days, and if you decide it's not right for you, you can cancel anytime within the first week. No questions asked. Download Juna today and get started. Now, back to the show.
I always thought it was like right when they started those skills, because I think about like when my son started crawling, he was then working on that skill in his bed, in his crib. And I was like, oh, this is definitely impacting our sleep. But it would have been fun to see the data beforehand leading up to it.
Yeah, I think it's so interesting. The more people who use Nana, they'll get so used to being able to see when those things are about to happen. And that's pretty exciting.
Yeah. One of the other things I think is so interesting that would show up in the days, like all of my kids dropped their night wakings differently. Like my first one was super methodical about it. And once he dropped a feed, he never went back. And that was not like up to me. It was just like, you know, I guess he was just happened to be ready. Whereas my daughter was just like all over the map. It was just like some days she'd sleep through the night, and then the next night she'd wake up two times. And so it was like so unpredictable, and for me, so much harder to deal with that. And then my youngest son was in between. He was pretty methodical, and then would occasionally wake up 3 times. And so that was really hard. I'm curious, what were some of the like challenges that you might have faced early on?
I feel like my oldest son was a self-soother, so he was a thumb sucker. And I kept thinking, oh boy, what's this going to do? All the things you hear about teeth and mouth and everything. But I let him do it, and he was the easiest one to sleep train, I think, because he could self-soothe so well. My second was very much a pacifier baby. So as long as he had a pacifier, he was fine. He actually slept really well most of the time. And usually he wasn't hunting around for that pacifier. He usually just needed it to fall asleep and he could stay asleep. But he took a whole year to really start sleeping through the night. He would religiously wake up a couple times a night, and it was just his thing. And then my daughter actually was colicky at first, and then she had such awful like separation anxiety, and because she had the reflux from being colicky, she would just throw up. So she would get so hysterical that she would throw up, and my husband and I just finally gave up and said, "We can't clean this up 3 times a night. That's so much harder to put a baby back to sleep when you're groggy, but you also have to clean up a huge mess." And it just got to the point where I think in many cases we put a bed in the room with her, so one of us would have to sleep in there and make sure that she didn't get to the point where she would get so hysterical. But that was a really rough one. Now, fortunately, she oftentimes will share a room with one of my boys, because they have more than one bed in their rooms. So she's more comfortable kind of by herself. But yeah, every single one
different. It's so funny. We're obviously talking about those early stages, but I what was has also been surprising to me, and you said this obviously before we started recording, you have a 5, 8, and 10 year old. I have a 1, 3, and 5 year old. So you have 5 more years of experience on the kids side. But I thought I was home free as soon as like we sleep trained and my kids are sleeping through the night. But the hilarious thing is that it's just never over. There's always something new that comes up. Like I remember with my firstborn, when he was 2, he had been sleeping through the night since he was 8 months. And he all of a sudden, he just did not want to go to sleep. And let me tell you, sleep training, a 2-year-old is very different than a 4-month-old because they are very verbal and they will do whatever they can. Like I remember my son yelling from his crib, "I have to poop," like over and over, and being like, "Oh my God, what do we do?" And then with my 3-year-old right now, like as soon as you move from a crib to a toddler bed or to a normal bed, you have to deal with the getting out of bed, that kind of freedom. Some people don't have any problems with that. I have very big problems with it. But it is. It's just I keep thinking, and my 5-year-old now has nightmares like occasionally and will come in. And I'm just, the one thing I've learned is that the more kids you have, the more likely your sleep is going to be interrupted.
Oh my gosh, yes, because each one of them is so unique. I have similar, what's interesting is we have a postdoctorate sleep coach on our team who develops all the sleep training for Nanit. And when I first joined the company, I think my daughter was 2.5 maybe. And I said, "Oh my God, she's still not sleeping. Can you help?" And she's, "Sorry, I don't do toddlers." And they're like, she's like, "No, we don't go that far. It's too hard." What do I do? It was so funny. There's no real coaching program for that type of regression at that age because they're capable of so much at that point, which is just so interesting. And then I think the uniqueness of just what brings them out of bed once they can escape and they have that moment. I think, well, then, you know what, for us, we didn't focus that much on, we focused on potty training really early, but we didn't, because we did it so early and we trained our boys so early before my daughter came along, we kept them in like a pull-up or whatever.
Like we did
and it was way too long that we left them in there. So they were like 4 or something when I think we started to like, when I basically said, "You got to wear underwear to bed." And then it was 3 months of wetting the bed. So it was things where I'm like, "Oh, that was way too long. I shouldn't have just ripped off the band-aid early and had them don't drink anything before bed. Oh, does that even matter?" My oldest son was such a sound sleeper. He just couldn't wake himself up. All sorts of, now you're trying to figure out what to do before bed. Just...
Yeah, but it's funny because I went through we potty trained my son when he was 2 and then let him wear a diaper until he was, I think it was like 3.5, and then started to night train him. But part of me just didn't want to because I'm like, look, I finally have 2 kids sleeping.
Like, I don't want to mess with it.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm curious, what do you do? Because this is a question that I think comes up, but what do you do when your kids nap or have quiet time?
Well, since my children are a little older, none of them nap.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. What did you do? What did you do?
Occasionally, my youngest little dad, "Oh, I don't even remember. I was never a sleep when they sleep person. So I would never say that I napped when they napped. I think usually when I had quiet time, I probably tried to get more stuff done. Personally, though, I think after the first kid, nap time doesn't happen simultaneously. So you always end up having a kid who's awake. So for me, there was never really any nap time once I had a second. There was never really any downtime, quiet time once I had a second kid. I could never get both kids asleep unless I went for a super long walk with both children and they finally fell asleep in the stroller in the city. And then, of course, you have to hike all the way back home. So you're still out walking with your stroller in the city, even if they're sleeping. So that's roughly, it's all a blur.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty proud of the way I've handled the sleep and quiet time. So my first son dropped his nap way, way too early. But the good thing about that was that we would just time his quiet time with whenever my daughter was napping so that we did get those simultaneous times. And that was heaven. And with him, whenever he was napping, I took every opportunity to get more work done. And then when we had our second kid, I was just like, No, I'm resting. I'm exhausted. I'm going 100. So I live, and now all three of my kids, well, one of them still, that my baby is still napping and my other two are doing quiet time. And now that, like, now that my middle is very excited to be doing quiet time with Luca, I've made it very clear that quiet time for them is also quiet time for mommy. And so they are not allowed to ask me, or I will refuse any request that is made of me during quiet time. It's like, this 90 minutes is my time. I'm either going to watch a show. I've got to clean up the kitchen first after lunch, but I just, it's like my time, and they have started to respect it. And so I'm like, this was a win for me.
That's great. My children are tornadoes. So even if they have quiet time, it is just loud. It was almost, my oldest son is so extroverted. He just, you hear him before you see him. But I will say that now that they're older and they're much more independent, I feel like you mastered this so much better than I did early on. But I finally feel like I can say to all of them, mom just wants an hour. End of the day, like, let mom go in, maybe watch a show, chill out for a second, have a snack, and then we'll read together or we'll do something. Like, I always prep them for what we'll do together once I'm done. I can't grab that quiet time every day, but they get it. They get it.
Yeah, I think it also, I'm not looking forward to how much it will change when we have three kids in activities that, like, there's no quiet time. There's just, everyone's on go.
I feel like sometimes even my team at work is like, how come you never have any relaxation time on the weekends? I'm like, well, between my three kids, they are on 6 baseball teams and some baseball team, 2 soccer teams,
yeah,
gymnastics, 3 basketball teams. Like, it's just, it's, there's no way. Our days are like 4 to 5 sports at a minimum of the weekends. And so they're exhausting. Mm-hmm. By the time Monday comes around, and woof,
yes,
I'm ready to just relax.
I know. That was how my childhood was. So I have a feeling it's going to be very similar. Well, let's talk about our sleep habits, because I think so much of the way our kids sleep and our kids sleep behavior, then I know that I've learned a lot about my own sleep since having kids. And so I'm curious, what are your sleep habits as someone who's obviously busy, you're running a company and you have three kids?
Oh my gosh. Well, it's interesting. So I realized, I really do think that I was probably operating at about 60% for the first 6 or 7 years. Fortunately, I think that was right before I joined Nanit. And then when I joined Nanit, I had to travel a lot. It was the first job I've ever had where I had to travel quite so much, especially internationally. And now I have these kids. And so I think that at one point, I remember thinking, I got to learn more about how sleep is impacting me. I need a better understanding of how much sleep I really need, the quality of that sleep. What are the right times for me personally that I should be trying to get that sleep? And how do I get it? And I actually had to consciously decide. And so, of course, like many people, I bought an Oura Ring and decided I was going to figure out. And I know you could do that with Apple Watch and other things too. It was just my choice was the ring. And I started study what was going on, pay attention a little bit more, and really learn when my sleep really changed from night to night, understand how I felt and how much sleep I got. And now I would say what's ended up evening out is that we have a whole system in the family now because of all those activities we just talked about, as well as 2 full-time working parents. And we tend to all go to bed at about the same time. it's funny, like, I'm usually the night owl. I like to stay up a couple hours past everyone. My husband goes to bed super early because he's a morning person. So we always have that understanding. But because the kids kind of end up waking up and needing to do things and needing to go to bed a little bit earlier, just makes sense for us to quiet the whole lockdown. So most days, even though I still claim to be a night person, I operate really well as a night person. I sometimes find myself only staying up a little bit later than everybody else a few times a week. And I definitely can tell when I don't get the sleep I need because I'm much more, you know, consistent about it now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. Like, I remember, you know, having my first kid and like doing all this reading about how like when you're overtired or you miss their windows, they end up getting like less restful sleep. And I don't know why I didn't ever make the connection. That would probably apply to me too. And then I got a Fitbit watch and started tracking my sleep, which is why I like love that Nana does the data too, because you see those trends with your kids, trends with yourself, and then you can identify and make changes. And I was like, man, I'm looking at the data on my Fitbit and I'm like, if I go to bed after 9:30, I wake up at 5:30 and I have wake ups all throughout the night. But if I hit the window before 9:30, I just get much better sleep scores. I'm getting more deep sleep. And my deep sleep is where I'm most impacted, because all of my deep sleep was in the first, like from 9:30 to 11:30 or almost midnight. And I'm like, and if I cut that short, then I just am getting, I'm getting terrible sleep. And so now it feels like the data is in my hands and I can make better decisions with it. I think I'm up with one or mostly two kids at 6 or 6:30. And so I know that my morning's going to get cut short. So if I'm going to bed later, it's tough luck for mom. Not as good at my job, not as good at parenting, less patient, all those things. And it's crazy like how much sleep impacts that.
It really is. I think sleep will be a pillar for Nana, will help sleep for as long as they help with it. And I'm a big advocate now of learning about that data and looking at, imagine how much sleep must in, because they're also developing. Those rapid growth changes and brain changes and all those incredible developmental things that happen all throughout childhood. And imagine if you had a really athletic kid, and you know, from his perspective, how does sleep impact a child? And yeah, a child's performance versus an adult who probably has a bit more stamina and developed and their body can handle it. So I think it's in testing and learning and all of that, I think sleep is probably so much more critical than we could have ever imagined. And we're learning about it now, I think, as adults so much more because of all these tools that we have. But then it may be one of the only things that can really help you understand what's really going on as your child develops.
Are you a breastfeeding mom needing to boost her milk supply, or a nursing mom wanting to maintain good milk supply during your pregnancy? Well, we are excited to introduce you to GoLacta, an all-natural galactagogue and superfood many moms and health professionals around the world are calling the miracle supplement. 100% made from nature's own galactagogue, their pure moringa leaves are farmed by GoLacta out in the Philippines. Vitamin C, calcium, potassium, and protein. Moringa leaves pull double duty. They're both plant-based superfood and a galactagogue, so both moms and babies will reap the nutritional benefits of the moringa leaves. Added to being an amazing superfood, GoLacta is the ideal supplement for nursing moms, and is not only clinically proven safe to use while pregnant, but because of its superfood qualities, it also provides moms and babies the key nutrients they need for healthy living and growth. I wish I knew about this during my breastfeeding journeys, but I'm just glad I get to share this with you today. You can buy yours today from the GoLacta website, www.golacta.com. Available in easy-to-use capsules or in a powder, so you can incorporate it into some of our amazing smoothie recipes in the app. Use code capital GL-JUNA21 for 15% off your first order. Once again, you can order today on their website and use the code GL-JUNA21 for 15% off your order.
I'm curious, how long do your customers use Nanit on their kids?
Oh, I love that. I get that question all the time. We have not seen them stop. So we've been in the market for 4 years. We see quite often that parents will move us from the crib to the toddler bed. Mm-hmm. And because the camera is such a premium camera itself, they'll continue using the camera more as a nanny cam, like yep. Even later than that.
Yeah.
So we see it being more multi-purpose, but also much like yourself and me, many parents just have children back to back, if you will. and so one is still in the crib, or maybe transitioning out of it when the other one comes. And so we see sometimes multiple nanites in the home, or just that nanite being repurposed for the second child. But as a brand and as a company, we're really starting to learn more and more about the impact of sleep. So the sleep, we have a clinical research team that really tries to understand those sleep patterns and how they grow with a child. So long term, we really hope that families will be able to use for life, if you will, maybe not as a camera, so to speak, but just as they transition through tools that they use, they really become more informed about tracking sleep.
Yeah, it's. I was just going to say, because we, like my son at around 4 insisted, like really wanted the camera out of his room. And I only used it to check how much sleep he had gotten the night before. But all of a sudden privacy became a thing. And I tried to find a wearable for him so I could do that, but just everything out there for kids is shit. So you guys should do that.
Well, that's what I talk about a lot. I think we would be the first people to make that, a wearable that syncs right up and could be a lot of fun. So that's definitely on the horizon. So
yay!
Be on the lookout for something that kind of helps track that stuff. I'm a huge believer in that. I actually have seen, I get the best videos from parents. And I saw this one little boy who, he was in the crib. He couldn't have been more than 2. He must have been 1.5 years or something. And he knew that there was a camera above him. He knew it because he would stand up, look right at the camera, right into the eye of the camera, and then turn the stand so the camera wasn't over his crib.
Oh my God.
He would actually turn the angle. Like, he knew the camera was staring down. I couldn't believe it. I'm like, how does this kid know? He's so strategic. He turned it thinking that he could get out of the crib and no one would see him get out. So he wouldn't be put back in, or he would like have his freedom or whatever. I'm just like, the problem-solving capability of the children is incredible. Especially when they have cameras.
My last question was going to be, do you have a funny story that you can share about something sleep-related? And I'm going to share mine because it's related to this. And it cracks me up. And so my daughter is 3.5. And as I mentioned, she's the one that we struggle with getting out of her crib, not waiting until her light is green, like to come out of her room in the morning. And it is just, it's a constant battle. Her 1-year-old brother shares a room with his 5-year-old brother, and they're not in the same room as my daughter. And every morning, Kyla would wake up, she'd come into our room, I'd walk her back to her room, it'd be this whole thing. And then she realized that if she went into my son's room, took his sleep sack off, let him climb out of his crib, that if she came into our room with a 1-year-old, she would not be sent back to her room. So now that is the new routine. She goes in, she wakes up her little brother. Well, usually he's up and he's just like yelling, "Kaka, kaka." What is her name? Her name is Kyla, but he calls her Kaka. And he's just yelling for her to come get him. So she sneaks in quietly as to not wake up Luca. And then the two of them come marching into our room. And I'm like, it's so smart. She's just, then I won't be marched back to my room. So
that is fantastic. That is the best. That's the best. I don't really have a ton of like crib stories that I can remember. Everything, like I said, is a blur.
Yeah.
I do remember being terrified of the kids, especially the first one, like climbing out.
Mm-hmm.
And the first time he did it, he got his leg got stuck or something. So I raced him to the ER. He was fine, but he never did it again because it was painful. And it was dramatic, and he was like completely traumatized. So I kept him in the crib till he was like 4. He did not ever attempt to get in the crib again. I'm like, that was brilliant.
Yeah.
Well, my second son, by the time he was 2, he was like a monkey. He could just crawl right out. And so he could do it so safely. Like, he had figured out exactly how to do it, that we also left him in the crib till he was like 3, 3.5, but he crawled out for a whole year. Whenever he wanted to, you just get out.
funny. I will say the one trick that we learned over 3 kids was if you leave them in a sleep sack, they can't swing their leg over. My first son just like, no, he just wasn't really interested in attempting to climb out of the crib. So he was fine. And he stayed in his crib until he was three. My daughter was climbing out of, she had climbed out of the crib. But the reason that she started climbing was she refused to wear the sleep sack. It was like, she was like, no, I know I can climb out with this sleep sack. So I'm waiting for my youngest to realize that too, because he can climb right out without the sleep sack. But if the sleep sack is on, and we wear it backwards now, so he can't unzip it himself, because he was doing that. Kyla comes in, she unzips his sleep sack, and that's the new routine. But
Trudini, these kids, I know, I feel like I can't remember why we didn't use sleep sacks as much. I don't know why we didn't. I think maybe because it was so warm in our New York apartment all the time. The heater probably cranked up so high, just the building heaters. But one of the things that we encourage now with Nana, we do make a sleep sack. And we do say that. We say sleep sack definitely helps with kind of that crib safety and the climbing. Because there have definitely been injuries. It's not a safe thing for kids to run out of their crib. Sleep sack, I've definitely heard that recommendation before. I don't even know why I do.
I really wish that we had a Nana on Kyla going in and getting Levi, just so we also had the conversation too, because there's definitely like some talking between them.
Hold on, Levi. It would be so great. Yeah, and that's my favorite part about Nana. Everybody is always like, the data, the data. And I'm like, yes, I know. It's the best thing ever. This data is going to be life changing. People are going to be able to, like, you know, they're going to get to know their kids so well. They'll be able to, you know, prevent all these things from happening. But I absolutely love that the camera can capture things and automatically record. Yeah. Because there's so much that goes on in that crib. It's just, it's brilliant. Everything I get sent, I can't believe it. And I don't think parents would ever see it. They wouldn't see it unless they got this video. And that's why I get so much fun content, from parents, because they're capturing all this great stuff. So yeah, I know those little conversations must be so special.
Yes. Well, Sarah, this has been really fun. I feel like I haven't gotten to talk about sleep in so long. It feels like a distant memory and must be very distant with your youngest being five. But why don't you tell people where they can find you?
Well, I mostly just say they could find me at nanit.com. You can get through anywhere. So nanit.com, just in terms of where you can find Nanit in general, anywhere where there's a major baby registry, as well as if you want to use those FSA, HSA dollars, you can also use those on a Nanit. I highly encourage that too, if you got some extra money in those programs. And of course, Instagram at getNanit, if you want to follow us. We have an amazing community that it's an open community. Anybody can join, and there's incredible content there. So I encourage everyone to join our community and check out our blogs. So lots and lots of content, I would say, on the website and Instagram. And I think we recently launched on TikTok too. So if you want a little knit entertainment,
you can
see us there. We have a sleep shuffle that it's all those fun dances that you do with your kids, but also with your tribe to get people to sleep.
Nice. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to come on the podcast. It really was so nice meeting you and getting to do this.
It was my pleasure. Thanks so much. It was a very cathartic conversation to talk about.
It comes full circle, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks again.
Thank you. Okay, that's all for today. If you liked today's episode, please share it with a mama friend and leave us a review. If you're pregnant, postpartum, or trying to conceive, you can download the Juna app completely free for 7 days. The app is available for iOS and Android and is designed to be your guide for all things health and fitness for this very special time of your life. If you have any suggestions for episodes you would like to hear or anyone you think would be a great guest on the show, please email me directly at sarah@juna.co. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you next week.